Hello and welcome to one of our very favorite episodes, 1F13, Deep Space Homer, first aired February 24th, 1994. David Silverman here, supervising director.
Hi, this is Mark Kirkland. I had absolutely nothing to do with this episode. I'm here to tell a story later, a true-to-life story about Homer Simpson in outer space.
And this is Matt Groening, and I'd like to tell you all to, this could be a drinking game audio commentary. Every time we congratulate ourselves for our brilliance, take another swig.
Hey, look how brilliant this is. We actually see Homer's skeleton is way back from Neanderthal days, and that explains a lot. I hate these workers. This is David Merkin, showrunner, executive producer, and writer of this particular episode.
And brilliantly done.
It was good fun. Hello. We had a lot of controversy when we did the show.
Mainly the controversy is those background characters wobbling their mouth.
Well, this one where they're not wobbling at all.
Oh, my gosh.
They look a little dead. Well, you know. This might have been a retake that did not quite get through.
They were moving too much for me. That was.
These things do happen.
Well, yeah, awesome. They do get a nice odd hush from Mr. Byrne.
Actually, I thought it was from my name going by.
This is showing us that Burns has no idea where he is at the moment until and he wants someone to bring the head of Colonel Munster. That's how what a nice guy he is in any of his fantasies.
Much like our current administration.
Look how hopeful Homer is. That's great acting on that. I love.
He can't wait. He knows he's going
to
get it.
He has to. He's the only one who can get it, and then it doesn't happen.
So like the way his arm goes down with the weight, once again, Mr. Burns' strength.
I love this
And
joke.
That's amazing. There's something that's actually set up in the first minute of the show that gets paid off.
That's
incredible.
I'll show them inanimate.
He's inanimate.
He just stays there.
That's not like a word. Inanimate carbon rod. Where did that come from, anyhow? Did you have a vendetta against inanimate carbon rods?
Oh, yeah. They always annoyed me because they don't do enough. I love it. This is actually mentioned that food is green there. It's like green globs that they're eating, which is very
odd. Well, I
think
it's people, actually.
This is a little bit of an homage to the Three Stooges, Curly in particular. This is the way Curly would run around like this.
It's a great piece of animation.
And here it starts out being funny, and then because Homer keeps doing it, it starts to disturb the family.
They're not laughing much longer. It just keeps going.
In later seasons, we'd be doing that for another 2 minutes.
I love the way he says, TV won't laugh at me, and then TV is laughing at him. It's a lovely day for a lawn. Was this our first Tom Brokaw? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
This is a brilliant, brilliant Tom Brokaw by Harry. And we purposely do write a lot of L's into the dialogue because we enjoy the way Tom says them, and they're very specific.
Harry's very good with any announcer voice, basically. You know, sports announcers, particularly. Kirk Gowdy does dead on.
Now, the whole idea for this episode was something that I had in my head for a while, where they had started sending normal people up into space, schools, teachers, and people, and you know, to show that anyone could go up there. But it still remained fairly boring. And people were taking launches for granted at that point, and the ratings were very, very low, and people just took it for granted at this point. And I figured it would be interesting to try and get the ratings up to send a very average-type person up into space, and Homer was the perfect choice for that. And that created, you know, we always had discussions with the writers and, you know, with everybody in the show. People have different opinions about things. People were concerned that was too large of an idea, that somebody like Homer would never get sent up into space.
I, in particular, the writers filed out of the room.
We had a special meeting about it.
Yes. And, you know, we stripped down to our skivvies and
as we always do. And that really, by the way, that really cuts the tension. When you're in your underwear, suddenly things aren't as important.
No, my attitude at the time was this was such the original script. This was so big. It was such a big idea that I thought it gave us nowhere to go. That I said, okay, if we got Homer in outer space this week, then how do we top that? That was my attitude. And you and I really, really disagreed very strongly about this. And obviously, the show got made. And I think that one of the things that came out as a result of this was that every single aspect of this show was worked on so hard in order to make it work, even with such a huge, huge story.
We were careful to add, to make sure the human element went through it. And, it's good when shows are questioned. There's no doubt about that. And there was a general question about the concept of Homer going into space. I never thought it was that big of an idea. Though it was my goal to make it so the show would have to end after this show. That was my goal.
But you know what? One of the things that changed was everybody at NASA was completely insane and as stupid as Homer. And they got toned down a little bit.
Yeah, toned down a little bit. But we sort of, the point was that they sort of were a little bit boring there and were interested in tiny screws on space and stuff. I mean, what actually happened, too, is that Jim Brooks was actually very encouraging about the script and very supportive about it, understood what the idea was. And that was helpful at the time to calm. And as I said, Matt is saying we had a disagreement, but there were other writers, too, who were worried about it. And I was very insistent that we could do it and make it a real story. And one of the main things I think that we brought up, that we amped up as we went through it, was the relationship between Homer and Marge and about it and him being a hero to his son. So we made sure it was grounded. It was always going to be a goal to do that, but we really focused on that. And sometimes we had this on other shows too, disagreements. It can bring up a lot of questions and make us focus harder and make us work harder on things. And so it's ultimately a good
thing. So that thing where they got hit in the head. Remember the original version of it? Their eyes went crazy and they went.
They did?
Ooh. Yeah.
You mean in the animation?
In the animation.
Oh.
So we changed. I mean, one of the things we did was we made things as outlandish as they were, as realistic as possible.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
There's still one gag coming up, which still makes me shudder, but we'll get to that.
By the way, I love it. We have a lot of references to films that, like 2001 and Planet of the Apes, but I love the fact we have a reference to the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yes, just right in there for no reason to go to Cape Canaveral, formerly Kate Arbuckle.
No.
This is a great line.
And, this is a scene that I had written in there just to sort of point out how insane this idea was. Everybody keeps saying, is this a joke? Now, this I do love this speech that Homer does, and another fantastic performance by Dan. Whenever we give him a famous speech from a movie, he just hits
a
home run with it.
Just dives right into it.
And you hear that echo?
Yeah.
That's Dan Castellaneta in the previous recording studio that we don't use anymore. Off mic, badly recorded.
Which is great.
I love the hand being pulled.
I like that the audience just watched it. They're taking notes. They're rapt attention. Tests to determine which one of
you is most qualified. And this was a great opportunity to take Barney through some changes, too. And the way we even, redrew Barney here, once he cleans himself up, it's amazing how well Barney cleans up and how believable he becomes as a potential astronaut candidate.
Wow, my father an astronaut. I feel
this works on the main story?
Yes, this is where we made sure to have the family situation going where it's about trying to win the respect of his kid.
Yeah, the idea, I remember, was to make it so that Homer wanted to get the respect of his family, but he was really afraid.
Right. We have a lot of fun with his fear, which was, again, an original concept, which is taking a normal person. It's a great idea, but it is incredibly scary to go into space, and Homer was perfect to, and we actually do it in a really fun way because we show an Itchy and Scratchy cartoon, and that's what gets Homer thinking about how scary it can be. He's been here since sunrise.
This is a great gag, too. There he's starting to clean up.
Yeah.
Just a reminder that Barney is also Dan Castellaneta. Barney is Homer, and Homer is Barney.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
That was a great.
That's great animation.
That's great. That'll.
And I don't know why. I thought it was just kind of fun to have this turn him into Popeye.
This is a gag that I hate.
Oh, do you hate this gag? And we do it again, too.
I hate it even more the next time.
Again.
I've completely forgotten this version of it.
It makes no sense.
No, I have. This is also one of my favorite things.
So here's Matt and David fighting about the episode.
This is the actual Star Trek music. which I had used before in Get a Life as well. I love that music.
Great.
And I was actually at the recording session. It was great to actually hear a 41-piece orchestra play that live. It was exciting. Now, here's Buzz Aldrin.
I love this.
Buzz had a different line there. We had written a different line for Buzz here. You know, saying second, Buzz Aldrin, second man on the moon, and he was going to say first to take a soil sample, which I thought was a really nice joke. But Buzz said, you know, I really don't have a problem with being the second man on the moon, and he really doesn't.
Yeah.
I have to say, of all the celebrities I've met, and I've just met, like, everybody, I've been incredibly lucky in my life. Buzz Aldrin is one of the most impressive people I have ever met in my life. This is a brilliant, brilliant man who is also fearless. And also very non-egotistical when you talk to him about it. I said to him, I said, you know, you went up to the moon. I said, to me, the chances of coming back from that were like 10, 5%. Because, you know, when they get back on the LEM, all they have to do is push one button and then it takes off. In my life, I can't get my toaster to work. So if I was going to push a button that was going to get me back to Earth, I would push it and nothing would happen. We'd just sit there on the moon and there's no rescue. They had no fear. Zero fear. First men on the moon. There's nobody more impressive on Earth. But Buzz wanted to say that other line, saying...
I don't understand it.
Saying second comes right after first, which I guess we all kind of thought was even funnier. But I don't think Buzz necessarily thought it was funny, and I hope he didn't take offense, because we, you know, Buzz, you're a much better person than I will ever be, and I worship you, so I hope you're not mad at me.
By the way, the building that Barney landed on was the old Klasky Csupa building, I noticed. I forgot. We had
That's
used
right.
It a second time.
The Pillow Factory?
The Pillow Factory,
yeah.
And then he's run over by a marshmallow truck. I love all the soft things hurting. We've done that before.
Oh, like we
little
count
alien
the signs.
Reference
yeah,
there.
Just count them off.
I heard some Star Trek music.
Yes. There's great Star Trek music there. That is absolutely correct. Though I think probably legally not Star Trek music. This is 2001. We just stole everything. This is also very accurate.
That's right. That's from 2010, I think.
Now, one of the things that obviously happened is this became a favorite episode of, and that's a little bit of...
Outland is what it was called?
Well, also Mars, Total Recall.
Total
when you
Recall.
Go to Mars.
That's right.
It also came
from... We talked about that at the end of the movie. Somebody's head expands.
It's like a cartoon. And then he was okay in 2 seconds. His head expands to that size, and then the atmosphere shows up. The atmosphere shows up in 10 seconds, and he just kind of shakes it off. Oh, I'm fine.
His eyes aren't even red.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was absolutely... He gave maybe a little headache. And he takes a Tylenol, and that's it.
There's some pretty good shape, too, as I remember. That was a good Right Stuff.
This is a great Right Stuff, and then this twist on the Right Stuff, which
that's
is Homer
great.
Getting no and running away in regular motion after slow motion.
That was a really nice shot, I thought.
As I said, this became a big popular show for NASA, and so I did check the accuracy of all of it. And you'll be happy to know that a lot of people in the centrifuge match turned to Popeye. And also the Saturn rings, you can't cut people in half on them. It's all completely real.
Cut your fingers on it pretty badly.
I love this dialing joke. Homer is so dumb that he forgets he dials the number and in the middle of a conversation keeps dialing. So we get the sweet relationship between the two of them, the important emotional stuff, but yet we also still keep it funny and strange at the same time. Something that The Simpsons does really, really brilliantly. I mean, you know, the thing I love about the series, Matt, and always do, is that it can turn on a dime, be incredibly broad, and then be incredibly emotional, just all within the same minute.
Well, I've tried to make this point in a number of times, and I don't think anybody ever understands, but I call it rubber band reality.
Yeah, I call it flexible reality.
And it's like they snap back.
We go way out, then
we snap back to real.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly the way I see it as well.
Surveillance satellite, check. Ant farm, check.
Setting up the ant farm joke.
That's right. Got a cue on that.
And again, Buzz was a great sport on the show, and he worked really hard on it. And as I said, it was so impressive.
Oh no!
Matt hates. It's Nixon, Matt. I tell you, it's all accurate. It's all
very accurate.
I remember we did a lot of mathematical calculations on Homer's face. Versus Nixon's face and the pressure points to create that. It's all, I'm telling you kids, what happened.
We just had to get our favorite.
There's so many good jokes.
This is one of my favorite jokes right here. This was a very early joke I had.
What's Kraft doing? I don't know. All this equipment is just used to measure TV ratings.
All those things you've been seeing for years, that's all they've been there for, is just
that's
to measure
beautiful
TV.
Beautiful animation.
That
right
is
there.
Gorgeous.
That
yeah.
actually was one time we used computer animation very early using like an old Amiga system. Oh, and here's the biggest contribution I did was this whole sequence. The director, there's a lot to do in the show, and Carlos was overwhelmed, so I took over this sequence.
This is a very complicated sequence, and David did it brilliantly. And this is what we would always depend on him to do, this real complicated, gorgeous stuff.
It was just easier for me to completely animate it because I didn't really know how to explain it.
Wasn't there a little computer use on that?
Yeah.
This was computer use on the potato chip because I wanted the potato chip to be very much
solid
and had a 2001 feel for the docking jet gag. And I thought it was very important to get that so people knew exactly what we're referring to.
Obviously, as so many people, an enormous Kubrick fan, and you know, you just can't measure his influence on all your work, and so that was thrilling to do that. I love this ants thing.
Freedom,
I think this
horrible,
was a
horrible
lot
freedom.
Of freedom, horrible freedom was George Meyer's thing, and that would give you a good insight into George Meyer's.
What amazed me about this episode, first of all, I thought tour de force of animation, hilarious, all this stuff, and then on top of it, there's a subtitle joke with the ants. You know, it's just amazing.
Really great. The
it
best
has,
subtitle.
It has a lot of layers.
President James.
This was also a great dream of mine to work with one of my hugest idols in the world, James Taylor, who is like a fantastic singer-songwriter and probably the greatest acoustic guitar player in the world. I mean, a lot of musicians like Sting and McCartney will tell you this and go on and on about what an amazing musician and writer and singer he is. And that guitar is actually based on his actual Olsen guitar. I made sure we designed it the same.
I think it's really great that you have a dialogue between Buzz Aldrin and James Taylor. I just think it's such a cool thing.
Yes, and Homer thinks it's President James
Taylor. And explain
Taylor.
The lyrics.
Well, the thing that was, the big story here was the song that's coming up, I had him do Fire and Rain.
Right.
And because there's a line in there, it says flying machines and pieces on the ground. And we had rewritten it to flying machines flying safely through the air because he realizes that they're in trouble. Now, when James came in, and I kind of knew him at that point, but we weren't that close at that moment, and I was very nervous. And he had said yes, and he'd read the script, but he had not read the lyrics of his own song, thinking that we had not touched this song, Fire and Rain, which was a very personal song, literally about the suicide of someone he knew, and
right,
it was very personal.
Right.
And now we had gone and screwed and messed around and sarcastically screwed up the lyrics. So he sings the song, Fire and Rain, a couple times for me, you know, and I'm recording it. And I said, well, let's try it with the new lyrics now, and thinking that he had already read them, and he kind of froze, and he looked at me and goes, I wasn't aware that there were other lyrics. This is the area here. And I said, well, we kind of changed. I think I almost lost consciousness. And if you don't like it, you don't have to do it. But if you do, it would be nice. And so I showed it to him, and I'm, you know, my heart's in my throat. Luckily, he laughed.
Oh.
He laughed. And then he called his lawyer. But no. He laughed, and he had a great attitude about it. And he said, oh, sure, I'll do this. I'll do this. And he did a great performance of it,
oh,
as
it's
you
really
can
great.
Hear when he changes it. And then it was funny when he's singing Carole King's song, You've Got a Friend, which is written by Carole King. He said, hey, did you cook the lyrics up on this one? I said, no, I wouldn't touch that. Those lyrics are perfect. So, his performance is great here. I love the way the NASA guy wants to hit him on the head. And the NASA guy sees James as an unkempt youngster. He knows about 45 years old.
One. Make hatch blow now.
This was also a running thing, is it make rocket go now, make hatch
right.
go now. The countdowns would always fall apart. And of course, Homer messes this up as well.
Oh my God! This is a.
And we see what a hero James is here.
he leaves his guitar away. Behind you.
And he drops his
well, that's
20,000.
Well, gig with you. Gotta go.
That is. We worked a long time on getting to say gotta go in the way that I like it to be said. But he did a great job. He was very, very funny. And James is very funny. If you ever see him in a concert, he's like fall down funny. He's annoying. He's annoyingly funny because it's not good enough that he writes and sings great music. He's also as funny as any stand-up you ever hear. I figure, well, I'm the funny guy and he has the musical talent. No, he has all the talent. It's very annoying.
I'll bet you.
Homer thinks about it, and then...
Yes, and that, the fact that Homer processes it and decides to still punch him in the head with the carbon rod, that's also George Meyer, and also the way George Meyer thinks.
This is a nice callback to the ants joke.
I love the fact that, Kent thought that the ants were coming to Earth, and, that also his allegiance is to them, and he wants to round up the other humans to work in the sugar cave.
Well, that's how he survived for so long. In our world.
We have this terrible sequence of the spaceship coming back, and they're breaking away for a movie. That's how great that station is. This is also from The Right Stuff, and I thought it would be funny if Homer sings Golden Grahams here. And that's what would calm Homer down, so that's
exactly.
Also accurate.
And I think Golden Grahams sales went up dramatically.
They did.
Well, this episode has a lot of tension in it.
It sure does.
There
I don't
is
know what
a lot
happened
of
next. Oh, there we go.
And this was the way that we got them in so that they could be around the news reporters instantly to save time. See, we put some L's in there.
I'll tell my story about Homer and Mars.
Go ahead.
Yes, yes.
This is a true story. I went to Jet Propulsion Lab family weekend, and I went through the tours, and I went up to a booth for the upcoming Mars rover project, where they had a little robot cart that went around on Mars. This is in the 1990s. And they had a pad of paper you could sign your name on, and they then took all the signatures and digitized them and put them on a chip on the robot that went to Mars. In this case, I drew Homer Simpson. And I met the engineers who were delighted, and they told me, assured me it's going to Mars. So up on Mars, as we speak, as we're here today, is a Homer Simpson on Mars.
This is also the one of the greatest cuts in all of cinema by Stanley Kubrick, of the pen turning into the satellite, and then the Homer Star Child, he gets hit by the Fox satellite, which is very accurate, a commentary on our relationship.
I think it was the nice baby dough.
It was a good baby dough. Speaking of the interaction with NASA were big fans of this. I was speaking somewhere, and this very lovely woman, Lisa Liu, came up to me, and her brother is Ed Liu, who is one of our great hero astronauts who went up into the space station. I think he's been up in space twice. And she said, you know, he's a huge fan. Could you sign this stuff for him? And we connected, and I signed some stuff to him, as signed to my hero, Ed. And then Ed asked, he was going up to the space station for about 9 months, and he said, you know, it'd be great if we have the Simpsons up there in the Deep Space Homer episode. So I made a copy of that and sent it up on a supply ship. And Ed very nicely sent us back a picture of that DVD floating in space in front of Mother Earth. Actually see the Simpsons floating up there, and it's still up in the space station. He's come down since then, and he's left it up there for other astronauts who also want to see that episode. So we want to thank Ed for that. It's an amazing thing to know that your work is orbiting the Earth. It's always good.